and ready to go. We are joined by a good friend of the show, Jeff O'Brien.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Say hello. That's your cue to say hello.
Thanks for having me, guys. Hello.
Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
It's good to be here.
Lawyer extraordinaire, but I understand you're not allowed to put that on your business cards.
Lawyer ethics rules, I know.
Maybe if you put it in quotes, does that...
Yeah, maybe.
Or if
some say he's...
Trademark it, maybe. Make it... Just yeah, own it.
Exactly.
Make it yours.
There you go. There you go.
Are you going to run through some of the news with us? Give us...
Yeah, lots of legal-related beer news as of late.
Yeah, why don't you run us through...
Well, let's start with the big one. There was a U.S. Senate hearing on Tuesday on the proposed AB InBev SAB Miller merger.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our U.S. senators, Amy Klobuchar, is, of course, on the committee and had a few headlines in terms of some of the questions that she had and concerns that she aired about what the effect of this merger is going to be on, you know, a lot of our, you know, her constituents, such as the, you know, the breweries here in Minnesota. And, you know, Carlos Brito, the chairman of AB InBev, answered it the way all of us have kind of suspected, is that in the U.S. we're not really going to see a whole lot of change or any effect from this, because as part of the deal, you know, because of antitrust laws, as part of the deal, the Miller brands were being sold to Molson Coors. In the U.S., the Miller brands will be sold through Molson Coors. This is more about AB InBev trying to expand its reach worldwide into Africa, Asia, other parts of the world. You know, we've seen in the last few years that the macro brands have lost market share, even though there are a lot of the market share still. They've lost market share, and craft continues to gain. So I think it's probably a smart move for them overall. You know, if you're rather than try to reconvert the already converted to craft, find other markets that, you know, might be more receptive to your product. So,
how much of a difference do you think that will make here at home? If they do have the monopoly in Asia and India,
I think the bigger issue is going to be, and this is our, you know, one of our next news topics, is we talked about it before, is this allegation that AB InBev has been manipulating its distribution network pressuring distributors to not carry craft labels, whether it be buying up, you know, brands like Elysian and Goose Island, and then offering those as replacements for something else that's truly craft.
Right.
Or just simply, you know, buying a distributor and, you know, not carrying those brands anymore. And I wouldn't be surprised, since that investigation's already ongoing. You've got the Department of Justice that has to weigh in on this merger. I would not be surprised if, as part of the department's approval of this merger, there may be some thing thrown in there about what they can and can't do with the distribution network. I could be wrong.
Can they take distribution away from them?
No. But they may maybe put some kind of, you know, kind of a put them on probation, so to speak.
Stopgap, sort of.
Some, you know, kind of slap their hand a little bit for what they've been doing. I don't know. You know, that's the thing is, the thing about the liquor industry is there's a lot of money to be made in it, and we've seen going back to Prohibition, you know, laws have consequences, you know, and this, you know, for better or for worse, we have this three-tier system, and some do very well in it. And of course, you're always going to have, I mean, the reason we have these franchise laws in the distribution network is exactly because of some of the antics of the big, the macro brands. So, you know, we'll see how it shakes out over time, but
there's been a lot of, you know, I've seen many articles written about this, and some of them have very alarmist tones about them. And I'm always a little skeptical about, you know, about articles framed that way of, if you're a craft beer fan, this is the worst possible thing that could happen, is this merger. How alarmed, realistically, should fans of craft beer be if this merger does indeed go through?
Well, just as for the merger itself, I wouldn't be too alarmed. I think it was Money.com had an article about, you know, crafts or the macro secret war on craft beer, and this is one of the steps they wanted, of course, is to
it's not a very well-kept secret.
I mean, they've got like a five-step plan, or they call it five-step plan to you know, kill craft. I don't think it... They can try all they want. I think that this is a matter of a changing society, changing culture. You know, we see breweries sprouting up all over Minnesota.
Right.
In places that are still, I would call, Miller and Bud, you know, country. And people take hold of them. There really is a shift away from a mass-produced, you know, national brand to more of the you know, the drink local. I mean, when you travel, you go try to search out the local craft beer. I don't think that's going to go back. I don't think that's going to be reversing. I think that, you know, all of these, you know, entrenched interest in the liquor industry are you know, fighting to keep a system or a way of in place that isn't going, that's going away. I mean, I think over time, I think a lot of breweries here in Minnesota have been very smart in creating a gateway beer. And I mean, like a, you know, maybe a lower alcohol content, could be a blonde ale or whatever you want to call it.
Session ale.
Yeah, a pilsner, some kind of a session ale, and getting those folks that have traditionally drank Budweiser and Miller to try craft beer. And that's, you know, and that's the way in. I don't see this trend reversing.
I don't either. And, you know, while this merger, if it does indeed go through, it may result in some shifts in the marketplace. It may result in maybe the liquor store that you currently go to maybe stocking less craft beer. But what that does is that opens up another opportunity for a different liquor store to become a little more specialized and offer more of the products that you like. There is, in my opinion, clearly enough market demand for craft beer, local beers, to overcome any pressures put on the distributors that may come as a result of this merger.
I agree. I think the key for craft beer is to not get too cocky. You know, the Budweiser folks want to paint us as snobs or pretentious or whatever. You know, we like good styles of beer. We don't want to get into necessarily denigrating a macro brand.
Of course not.
You know, there's something to be said about the science of being able to reproduce a beer like that on that scale consistently.
Right. Obviously, it's beer that a lot of people like.
It takes a lot of talent to make no flavor over and over and over.
Exactly.
Speaking of not denigrating.
But, that's what I do.
You know, there's always going to be folks that like that kind of beer. Our message needs to be, great, have that one, try this.
Right.
And as you know, it's almost like evangelizing as we convert, you know, Miller and Bud drinkers to something different. The tide will continue to turn, and we're going to continue to take a look at laws on the books that may no longer serve a purpose. You know, there's always this interplay with the regulators and the lawmakers as to how do we open things up for the local craft breweries but not do it in a way so that these big behemoths can exploit them in a way we don't want that. And that's really always been the interplay. Well, that's why I think it gets frustrating sometimes, the pace of change in some of these areas.
Very frustrating.
It is. But that's part of what's going on, is you've got this dynamic of you've got entrenched special interests, you've got this how far do we go, there might be, you know, baby steps to see, you know, can we do this in a way, you know, so that we can't have others. That's why you get into, like, the caps on at what level can you self-distribute, or
sure,
when can you have to cut off the growlers, all those kinds of things. That's all a part of, all plays into this, is where is the line to be drawn between where do we open it up ourselves up to these, you know, to these biggies coming in. And
that's a great tease for the next segment. We've got a really fun post from the Min Post by Peter Callahan that kind of gets into Sunday Growlers and some of the changes here in Minnesota and what that means for local craft brewers. We'll get into that next with Jeff O'Brien on the Minnesota Beercast here on the TCNT Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Beercast, recording live from Cigar Jones in Minnetonka. Thanks to Todd and Mike once again for having us out. We are joined by friend of the show, Jeff O'Brien, lawyer extraordinaire, even though he's not allowed to put that on his business cards.
Lawyer sadly. Extraordinaire.
Sadly.
Well, he does blog as well at jeffobryantoday.com. And, Loman Abdal will give a plug for the firm. Thanks so much for joining us, Jeff.
Hey, glad to be here.
Yeah, always a pleasure to have you on the show. It's a great perspective on the craft beer scene that we don't often get. Sticking in the beer news bag, we've got a piece from MinnPost, written by Peter Callahan. How Sunday Growler sales have affected Minnesota brewers. As we know, last legislative session, the Minnesota legislature opened the door for a little peek of Sunday sales. Let a little light in into the Sunday sales room, which had been pitch black for a long time.
Before we get into the news story, let me vent a little bit on the story. So I hear from people from time to time about, we have Sunday sales now because I can go buy a growler at a brewery. And it's like, well, yeah, you can, and that's great. But that's if you live close enough to a brewery for it to be convenient. That's if you like the beer being made at that brewery.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if you like paying the prices that you have to pay for a growler of that beer.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a Summit drinker, or if I'm a Surly drinker, or if I'm a Shell drinker, mm-hmm. or if I'm a Bud Light drinker, I'm SOL.
Yep. Yep.
I'm absolutely SOL.
Right.
This
we do not have Sunday sales.
No, so we don't.
That is not accurate nor fair to say.
The passage of Sunday Growler sales does something for craft brewers, and it does something for craft beer drinkers.
It's a good thing.
It's a very good thing.
Let's not paint it as a negative, but such
a small step in the way of where things need to go for consumers and for brewers in Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think the important thing is that we've now had several months of this, half a year or so.
And only half the state is on fire.
That's good. Exactly. That the state society has not crumbled
right.
At this point. And, you know, this is going to be a continuing fight in terms of, you know, a wide open Sunday sales. And, you know, we just had the article here a couple weeks ago in the Star Tribune about the municipal liquor stores, and they're, you know, starting to struggle.
Yep.
And
nice to see the Star Tribune take the tone they took with
yes,
that, too.
They yes.
Basically, for those that aren't familiar with the article about, was it last weekend, a week or 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
They came out with an article said the time for municipal liquor stores is coming to an end, basically, was the gist of the article.
I think the writing is on the wall. I think, as you saw in the article, the outstate municipal liquor stores are really struggling.
Well, yeah.
The metro ones are, some of them are still making money hand over fist, but Total Wine is locating its new stores just outside the city limits of these cities that have municipal liquor stores. We saw in Edina when the Bloomington Total Wine came in. Obviously, Edina was not competitive in its prices because their citizenry felt compelled to drive across into Bloomington to the Total Wine.
Edina and Richfield, I think, are the biggest examples of that. You know, and I don't think it's fair to pin it on Total Wine, and I'm not necessarily defending Total Wine in that regard, but it's competition, right? And that's really the problem with the monopoly that municipal operations have on liquor sales is, you know, we've got this monopoly and we're excluding all the competition.
Yes, yeah, it's the monopoly. The nice thing with Total Wine is they are large enough where they can, before one independent liquor store locating just outside the Edina city limits is one thing. A beer, wine, and liquor superstore is another.
Right.
And so we're going to see this more with more of those stores opening up. And the municipal liquor stores have been the biggest opponents of Sunday sales.
Yeah.
To my mind, it's crazy that you've got essentially the city government lobbying the state government to say, we know what's best for...
And threatening to run against the representative who was voting on the matter if they don't go along with it. Now,
right.
I give credit. I live out in Albertville, and our district is in with Elk River. And, you know, both Nick Zerwas and Mary Kiffmeyer voted in favor of repealing the ban last year, even though Elk River has a boatload of revenue coming in from Sunday sales, or from the municipal liquor store.
Under a fair amount of pressure from their city councils, et cetera, against voting against it.
Well, and they operate their municipal operations at a higher expense than a normal operation would, because they've got built-in costs that aren't necessarily there when it comes to normal retail operations. And they also, because they've got the monopoly, they open fewer stores than you would in a normal city or a municipality, right? So, you know, if I'm running Elk River, I open 3 stores and that's all you get and that's all the consumer has, as opposed to opening up and letting 12 different places, 10 different places.
I think that's the big issue that a lot of folks have with the municipal jurisdictions is this monopoly aspect. We control it all. There's no private liquor stores in cities that have municipals. They don't want to compete against private. They don't want to have the Sunday open Sunday, because, you know, God forbid the neighboring city that isn't a muni jurisdiction has a liquor store there, people start shopping there. That kind of, I mean, people aren't cool with that. And like I said, it's an interesting coalition when you have the Star Tribune and the Freedom Foundation on the same side of an issue, saying this needs to go. And they obviously cannot run this liquor store as well as a private business owner. And the piece in there that if you live in one of those muni jurisdictions, you know, when you're being told that you have to have your taxes increased, that's time to ask, why are we doing this?
Right.
You know, because if these things start losing money, they can go. It's not like a private business owner. These guys have an unlimited fountain of money they can, you know.
Yeah, if you're a resident in a city that has munis and they're losing money and they're having to pull from the tax coffers to cover those losses, I don't know how you're not down there with pitchforks and torches.
Well, but not even think about losing money. Think about not making the revenue that you could and not providing the jobs that you could.
Right.
When you've got 3 municipal jobs, think about providing, you know, the jobs for 3 municipal stores versus a private enterprise or 6 or 10 of those private enterprises that have multiple employees
all competing against each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the employees and the jobs that they provide for your community.
The sad part is I don't see any action at the legislature coming down the pike that's going to somehow all of a sudden we're no longer going to have municipal liquor stores. But it's oddly enough, it could just be plain and simple market forces that force this era to come to a close.
I think it's because of the losses
that are starting to pile up.
I think that's where it's going.
So it's a little bit of irony there that the free market is going to spell an end to a government monopoly on liquor stores in some of these cities.
Before we run out of time in this segment, I do want to get your thoughts on this. The opposition to Sunday sales is multi-pronged. It's not fair to say that it's only the municipalities that are fighting against it. There are various efforts that, for their own various reasons, they all have their own different reasons that are fighting against Sunday liquor sales. But a significant one is the municipals.
Mm-hmm.
That is a significant force. If the municipals' days come to an end, and we start seeing more and more cities drop their liquor stores and allow private companies to come in and serve their markets, do you think that would be enough to relieve the pressure to keep the ban on Sunday sales on?
Are there
stronger forces out there?
The independent a lot of the independent liquor stores also oppose it. The wholesalers oppose it. Put it this way: the people that are making the most money under the 3-tier system oppose it. They're worried about this, that we're somehow going to move towards liquor being sold in grocery stores and convenience stores. And I always say, so what? Wisconsin does it.
They seem to be doing okay.
Isn't that the ultimate, Trump to these concerns, right? I mean, I can understand being the first state to allow Sunday liquor sales, but when you're the 39th state to allow Sunday liquor sales, the point doesn't really hold water, right? I mean, every state surrounding Minnesota allows Sunday liquor sales and has independent retailers, has small mom and pop shops, and does a good job of serving consumer interests. So clearly it's not allowing Sunday liquor sales that's going to get in the way there, right?
What I tell people is, you know, if at all possible, go shop for your I mean, if you're not going to go to a brewery itself, of course, but if you need to go to a retailer to buy off-sale liquor, you know, you need to know which ones are for it, for repeal, which ones are against it. And, you know, the real dynamic here, by shopping at, you know, what, you know, you have the grocery stores, Total Wine, you know, Target, all these places, they now all have liquor. If the wholesalers end up with that as their customers, they then those big stores are going to not going to allow them to mark everything up 30% and sell it to them. You're going to get the Walmart effect. They're going to get their margins cut, right? They aren't going to have the revenues that they normally would generate, and they aren't going to be over at the Capitol bribing legislators to keep this system in place. You know, all this stuff ties together. We don't have a small brewer exemption.
Bribe is a strong word, Jeff.
Well, okay.
So, but the consensus
lobbying.
You guys both agree, though, that just the force, the pressure from the municipals is not enough to repeal the ban.
They only get one vote. I mean,
they only carry so many sacks of cash up there. The wholesalers have their own.
Cynical.
You know what? It's funny.
No, it's realistic.
I talked to somebody one time from another state, and they explained some of our liquor laws, and the only logical explanation is there are groups that pay to keep the laws in place.
Right.
There's no logical justification for a lot of
really
the things
isn't.
We have on the books.
It really isn't. And with that, unfortunately, we are out of time in this segment. We didn't get nearly as deep into the beer news bag as we'd hoped, but good conversation. And thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
For spending some time with us on the Minnesota
Beer
Cast.
Come back soon. We got to do this more often.
Yeah, we
Sounds
really
good.
Really enjoy having you on the show.